You know, I like everybody else, I've had to deal with an inferiority complex at some point in time where you question yourself.
Yeah.
You ask yourself if you're good enough. You ask yourself, can I do this? And a lot of people said to me, you're crazy. You're driving the best cars. You're earning the best money. Your career is soaring. What are you going to do in America?
Welcome, everybody, to the Sincerely Accra podcast. My name is Joseph Inti, and of course, we are brought to you kind courtesy of the GCR Network. That's the Gold Coast Report, the premier podcast hosting network in the whole Ghana. Anyway, I want to give a quick shout out to my co-creator and producer, Mr. Kwame Asante Ofori, as well. Today on Behind the Hits, we're talking to someone very exciting. I don't know. I'm ecstatic, but you know me. I know how to compose, so nobody can tell. And even if you look back at like the work that I've done and how I speak and everything, you know it's from somewhere. I keep telling you that I'm like an amalgamation of different people that I consumed from my childhood till now. And this gentleman is one of those people from back then. He'd come on the TV, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. That whole radio voice thing. Oh, yes, he got it unlocked. So we're speaking today to the icon, the legend, the forever moment, Mr. Chris Atto.
Wow, Joseph, thank you.
Did you like that?
I loved it. Good intro.
Thank you so much.
No, thank you for having me. Let me first take the time to thank you so much for having me. And I am seeing the progress, and I've seen the progression. That was a great intro.
Thank you so much. I mean, it's Chris Atto. I have to give you my radio.
I'll take it.
All right, so disclaimer, this is not an attack, but I'm going to ask you. I found out you don't eat kinky.
You went straight into it.
Yeah, you're a girl, man. Why did you eat kinky?
You know what's funny? It's two things. One, when I was in secondary school, I think I might have eaten too much kinky. My Achimota days. Because it was Tuesdays and Thursday afternoons, and I think Wednesday evenings, there was always kinky. And then secondly, I found out from my dad when I was much younger that his mother, my grandmother,
your grandmother,
didn't like kinky either. So we're the ga defects. We got everything else ga.
Wow, that's very interesting. Okay, that was a little icebreaker. And I'm meaning to ask, is Chris short for Christopher?
It's Christopher, yes.
It's Christopher.
Yes.
Okay. And I also found out you're called Keith. Why did you not go with Keith at all? Did you think that wouldn't work for the
you
show
know
business?
What? I'm not sure. That's a great question.
Because you came up in the time where like there was Keith Sweat, you know?
Yeah, I didn't want people to think I was a player or anything. Not that it works, you know?
I don't think that worked.
No. Yeah. Yeah. But I think that that might again have attributed from my father, who was very big on, in fact, when I started to get a little more popular and he would notice, he's like, you know, you're not using the gun name. You know, you need to put the full thing there, Chris, me, Atto. You know, I'm like, I tried it for a little bit. I said, no, it's a bit too long. You know, you need something that's easy on the tongue. And of course, Chris being the first name. Keith is for, you know, someone that's really close to me or, you know.
Do you have people who call you Keith?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
A few ex-girlfriends. You know you're in trouble then. Keith!
Oh, so the Keith comes when you're in trouble.
I guess so.
Oh, okay.
Chris is a good guy. Oh. Keith is a troublemaker.
Well, thanks for that insight. Yo. You grew up in Darkuman, North Kanishi.
North Kanishi. It was right in the center of Darkuman, North Kanishi, and Bubuashi.
Okay.
You know, and it was also one of the areas that my dad got in on, was being the first and developed the roads and developed everything there. So we grew up almost isolated, you know, but at the same time, once you come out, you know, you have literally the cable and wireless on one side.
Yeah, I think it's like a Ghana Water Company around.
Yes, they eventually took over.
What was it like growing up with your family? I know you're from both your mom and your dad, you're like one of four, second of four.
This is correct, second of four.
What was it like growing up with your family in Darkuman, North Kanishi?
It brings fond memories. You know, I always say a huge thank you to my mother and my father for doing such a wonderful job with all of us because we had a good upbringing and a comfortable upbringing to a certain point where I believe we got the good foundations of being encouraged to read every day.
Okay.
I also had the privilege of, you know, my dad was 9 years old when he stowed out of Ghana. Nine.
Oh. Where did he go?
The USA.
Okay.
And he lived there for, you know, almost 30 or something, 40 years, and then decided to come back home.
On a ship?
On a ship going in, yes. Wait. I kept asking him how he did it. I'm not sure. But that's the resilience of a Ghana man that just wanted something more. Oh. He had started to play with, you know, an exchange student that had flown in at the time. And they used to play a lot on the beach. And, you know, so the family of the
exchange student
exactly decided to take my dad in, except they ended up leaving without him. And he said, you know, he's going to find his way.
Wait, so your grandparents, didn't they know their son was missing?
Well, I believe his father had passed at the time, but his mother looked for him for years. And it's an interesting story how we delve right into that. But I believe he told me he was at the U.S. consulate sometime trying to get his renewal. Uh-huh. And then he bumped into a fellow Ghanaian and, you know, he's like, you know, I know you, Fred Atoh, you know. And they were looking for him down here also at Jamestown to become, you know, the next chief because his dad had been a chief. And he said, your mother has been looking. They thought he was dead. So
there was no WhatsApp back then, you know.
No,
instant quick call.
You wait for the letters in and out. And this is what eventually led his decision, you know, to come
back home.
Yes. Oh. And when he did, even though he had had a previous life and a previous marriage out there, when he did, he came home. He met my mom and started a new life. Mm-hmm. And that's how we popped up. But one of the things that, you know, I always say that I'm thankful for is he came back with a lot of VHS cassettes. Mm. And these were pre-recorded cassettes of shows like Knight Rider, The A-Team, films like Gone with the Wind. So at a very early age, I found that I was exposed to Hollywood material and just acting and the beauty of it. And I probably didn't realize it then, but I said to myself, you know, I want to do that. I want to do that one day. I think I can do that.
Is it true you used to play dress up quite a lot?
You don't want to know. I got smacked around once or twice for that.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes, yes.
I heard you used to love to put on shows for your siblings, even though you were... Get this, guys. Chris was very quiet as a child.
Oh, boy.
And so when he got into this whole show business, it was like, what the hell is
going on? What's going on?
Yeah.
This is interesting. Where is Joseph getting his information from? Your sources are very strong.
Very strong sources.
Oh, my goodness.
I see. But, you know, before we move on from your dad, I also found out he was a renowned photographer.
He was. Fred Atoh was the photographer that was literally assigned to Dr. Kwame Nkrumah during the time. So he would fly out with him wherever he was going. One day he's in Kenya, the next day he's here, and he was basically doing his photography.
Wow.
He was also renowned for introducing colored photography to Ghana. You know, so we would watch him work. It was the first colored studio in Ghana.
Oh, he would take you guys to work?
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's so cool.
Oh, yes. The studio was right behind the house. It was part of the house. So, you know, sometimes we'll trail in there and back. But the simple fact alone that sometimes that can get missing in action. The fact that we were all looking at black and white photos until his knowledge from there, his time in the States, he worked as a photographer also. And when he came down, that's what he decided to do. So he introduced Kodak and colored photography and opened, you know, Fred Atoh Studios. The next thing you knew it, you know.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
It's so cool. It's like a legacy passed on and you're doing it also in your own different way.
You know what's interesting, Joseph? I think that it is a reverse because while he lived in the States, he was also a performer / entertainer, dancer.
I heard he was a tap dancer.
Yes, he was.
Oh, wow.
So it's so interesting that it seems like the former part of his life was the entertainer. And then when he came more camera oriented. And I find that, you know.
He passed it on to you.
Yes, somehow.
He passed it on.
Yeah. We got to carry the torch.
So apparently you were in St. Teresa's Primary School and you wrote Common Interest at 9 and you went to Achimota. What was it like going to school and boarding school at 9?
You know, great
Everybody
question.
Was older than you, right?
Yes.
Yeah, what was that like?
Great question. And I'll take the opportunity to say this, never let another person's opinion of you become your reality. I was so young and I was always the one being bullied, being kicked around. You know, in fact, I had such a tiny voice You know, and they'll call me and say, "Hey, young man, come here." You know, and I say, "What's your name?"
I say, "My name is Peter."
Yeah, say it again.
"My name is Christopher."
Pa! Before, you know, they give you those little.
Were you very tiny as well? I can imagine.
Very smallish, very quiet, you know, in my own little world. I used to do a lot of things in my head. I used to, when I walk from school, I would literally watch movies in my head. Mm. And it would be either movies I've watched already enough times, so I'd be replaying it in my head, or I didn't seem to realize it then, but it was the director being created. I would create stories in my head, full on stories.
Oh, you were lost in your own imagination until they would bring you back to reality with, "Hey, who are you?" You know, this, you know what used to happen to me when I was young? Because I consumed a lot of television, which we'll get into very soon. Mm. But every time I would watch a movie, I would come away from that movie with one of the characters' personalities, and I would carry for like 3-4 days. To the annoyance of my household and my classmates.
And well, it's the good thing is at the end of the day, now you can laugh about it.
Yeah.
You know? But
I'm guessing it was similar for you because you'd see a lot of the things online and then like...
sort of just imprint them and at the end of the day, use that, you know? But I'm not sure if I trailed off or I answered that last question, Joseph, but yeah.
this is a very informal show. I was trying to say, you know how like a lot of my, the things that I use in show business today, like bits and pieces of stuff that I picked.
Yes, remember.
And I'm guessing since you watched Knight Rider and all of these things.
They definitely affected me one way or the other. You know, and then to round it up, and it did come back to me. The fact that I was 9 years old and should have gone through the usual system, you know, JSS was coming in, but my parents wanted me to be a part of the old system.
Oh, that's why they rushed it.
Yes. Mm. I was almost forced to, you know, I didn't know any better anyway, but I'm grateful because it challenged me. And that's why I started from a place of being the littlest one being picked on in class to, oh, you know what? I can do this. Let me just do it for my mom or, you know, prove that I can do this. And next thing I knew, I wrote the common entrance for Form 5 at Achimota School. And before I knew it, I went into Accra Academy for sixth form and wrote the A-levels. At the time, they seemed like the hardest things in the world, but here we are.
I feel like you're a smart kid.
Good day.
Because, come on, common entrance at 9. What did you study at Accra Academy?
So I ended up doing painting,
is that visual arts?
Visual arts, yes. Okay. Definitely visual arts.
Because I know you, so he went to Kwame Nkrumah University. You know, they call it Kwame Tech.
Why do they call it Kwame Tech now?
They take out the things in the middle. You know, it's Kwame Nkrumah University of Science. It's Kwame Tech.
You know, in my day, it was simply called University of Science and Technology. And then they insisted that we add the Kwame Nkrumah University of Science and Technology.
Well, I know you did a bachelor's degree in painting.
I did.
Okay. Are you a painter? Do you paint?
I am. I'm so glad you asked. I'm looking to do an exhibition currently. I'm working on a few crafts.
Oh, really?
Yes, it's part of the foundation
launch.
Send
us an invite. We'll come.
I am definitely sending you an invite.
Yeah.
What we want to do is do a number of paintings and auction them off and use those proceeds to help the children that we're looking at focusing on with the foundation.
You know, we're going to talk about Chris's foundation as we go through his whole life. Yeah, it's on here. Don't worry. I found out that the first time you ate fufu was when you were in tech.
Hey, Joseph. Somebody should have warned me before I came in.
Is that true? What was the first soup you tried?
Light soup.
Okay.
And that was the thing I got stuck.
Oh, so light soup is still your favorite?
Yeah. Oh. So I veered away from the kinky, but fufu on a good day, man. Mm. I can eat fufu almost every day.
Do you remember who took you to eat the fufu, or was this a chance happening?
You know, before then, my grandmother was big on fufu. She'd make it. You know, I might eat a little bit of it with her. So at the time in tech, I had met a young lady who definitely was from Kumasi, Ashanti. Mm-hmm. She's like, you don't eat anything proper. It's always rice, you know. Mm. And she basically made some fufu for me.
Oh, okay.
And that was it.
You were sold.
That was it. The soup was so good. You had to take your shoes off just to eat it because you had to curl your toes.
And your shirt.
Yes.
You know when you sweat.
The freedom.
I see. Back to your painting degree. Back then, what was the big idea? You're going to study painting. And then what was like going to be the next step for you?
You know, I'm so glad you asked, because if we all saw way ahead, we would either make better choices or different choices, or who knows, whatever choice would still bring you back to it. But I was at a point where I was doing pretty much at everything. I mean, pretty good at everything. Math was great. English was great. Other mm-hmm. subjects were great.
But, oh, wow.
There was something that had stuck with me because of my brother, who was an artist and it still is. But I'd always wanted to be as good as Ken, like when it mm-hmm. came to drawing and so on and so forth. And at that point, I'm like, if I'm going to go to university, what am I going to study? You know, I love painting. I might as well get deeper into it. Okay. And sometimes I say, I don't know if I'm happy about that or not, because by the time you dig so deep into the theory and the theology of painting and what colors you can use against what colors and don't use this against that, it doesn't balance. When you tie yourself down to all those rules, it almost empties it out. You know, yeah, it's like,
Yeah.
You know, whereas before, it was just painting to release and express.
Theory is always such a buzzkill. Like, whenever you're like, can we get to the practicals already? You know?
But you know what? It's still necessary, because then it gives you a truly compounded, you know, knowledge, gives you compounded knowledge of what it is you're doing.
What kind of paintings would you say you do? I mean, I don't really know much, but like, are there like genres? So you know how music has genres?
I love it.
Are there genres of painting and art?
Yes. There are all kinds. There's still life. There's portrait. You know, there's, even now, there's body art, mm-hmm. you know, where you paint on the living body.
As a canvas, okay.
Exactly, as a canvas. And, it, you know, as long as you're expressing yourself, you know, you're also, it's a bit like acting, because you're also holding up a frame saying, this is us as a society. And that's what we also do as actors.
So you're not limited to any of the types? You do all types of painting?
The thing is, Kwame Tech. This is why they shortened
this. Yes, because it's too long. Nobody has time.
All right, but you see, we were taught to do it right. The Kwame Nkrumah University of Science and Technology will there you literally go. Take you through all the various forms. Aspects. Okay. And then you will specialize. So mm-hmm. I ended up specializing not in graphics, but in painting. Mm-hmm. And portrait painting was mainly it.
Okay, all right. So a little bit of a personal anecdote. I was working at VAST at one summer in 2012. And I was my boss at the time was Benny Bonsu. She had a radio show on, was it XFM? Herbert Mensah, yeah. And she had an assistant who would read the social media comments on radio.
Yeah.
And one time her assistant wasn't able to come through. And he's like, Joseph. She's like, Joseph. But can't wait, no. And that was my foray into this whole radio voice. You know, so I came out like, you know, yeah, Mansa from Kanishi says... And come to find out, Chris has a similar story. So Chris was working in the library at Groove FM.
Whoa.
And I think, so this is how Chris got onto radio the first time with his own show called Bookworm Square. I want you to tell the story.
Wow.
You tell the story.
I love it. Joseph, you're taking me back.
I know. Early beginnings.
Yeah. You know, it's, again, really interesting, because sometimes you have to give in to life. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes in order to grow, you just have to say yes to life.
To things,
and
yeah.
I believe I was at a point where somewhere inside, something kept vibrating inside me. And I keep saying, if you made it past 400 million sperm and you're here, then you have something to offer the world. And I think that at that point, it kept vibrating,
okay.
You know, just this thing to be not just in the public eye, but there were reasons for it. You know, my dad mm-hmm. had always said, you got to be a part of something bigger than yourself. Mm-hmm. And I started to go within and ask, okay, what am I going to do? What kind of platform am I going to embody that is going to be able to get people to look and hear and listen? And then I can impact people positively. Mm-hmm. And today, even though that's been a long journey, I believe that's what I'm doing now. But yeah.
Okay. So back to Groove FM.
Back to Groove
FM. How you got on radio instead of being in the library.
Let's get into it. So I wanted to be on the radio mainly because of that. Again, looking for the platform that would be correct. And I didn't know how I was going to do it. And then again, you know, sometimes when you give in and you say yes to life, you know, because the how is usually not our problem, but you have to believe. If you believe that something's going to happen one way or the other, it's almost like you've seen it. It's in your download and you know it's going to happen. And so I was out there. There was a competition on Groove FM mm-hmm. with the then Miss Ghana, who Ooh. Was extremely...
You know, who was the Miss Ghana back then? Sugri Boogri?
it was... Well, was it after Sugri Boogri's time? Because... It was Manuela. Her name was Emanuela or Manuela, and we could look back.
Later okay, on, I don't remember that name, but sure.
No, she was lovely. She was a wonderful representation of Ghana at the time, and I won the chance to go out and have dinner with her.
Oh, okay.
And so this was covered. We didn't have social media at the time, so everything was brought back to the station. And that morning, you know, they made a thing out of it. So, you know, last night they picked up this young man named Chris Atto, and they had dinner with him.
Hey.
And they invited me into the studio. And by the time, you know, the show was done, the host came to me and he said, "Hey, yeah, you got a great radio voice, you know, George Brune at the time. What are you going to do with it, eh?" And I said, "Well, you know, I've always wanted to get on radio," but I said, "Well, you got to start at the bottom. And then, you know, there's no using the elevator on the road to the top. You got to use the stairs." Mm-hmm. So he threw me into the library to start first. And there, that's where I would watch people. I would watch other DJs do their thing. I would watch how they, you know, control the console and how they would affect people through the power of the microphone. And my opportunity came once, and this is another reason why I relate to a personal mentor of mine, great speaker. His name is Les Brown, who also got his big break on radio first.
Is he Ghanaian?
No, he is African American, and he eventually became a U.S. senator. And now he is one of the, you know, greatest motivational speakers.
Wait, does that mean politics is in your scorecard?
You know what? If it'll help us keep our nation and our country,
really?
Why not? I won't say it here, but
okay.
But yeah, I understudied some of the greatest DJs at the time, Albert O, you know, and then there was a thing. Radio had a thing then where you had to be proper pronunciations, clarity.
Oh, yes.
You can't just talk over the music. So it was such a great discipline at the time. And until someone didn't make it to their show. And then they're like, "Who's in there? The manager called in, you know, and says, who's there?" It was Lee Hesse at the time.
Okay.
And I said, "Nobody's here, boss. It's just me in the library." He said, "Do you know how to work the controls?" I said, "Yes, sir." "Okay, go in there. Don't say anything. Just work the controls, okay? And we'll see who we can get." So I said, "Okay, yes, sir." So I put the phone down, and then I just dialed. You know, those days you dial it right
there.
Yeah,
the one that goes that way.
Yes. I dialed my brother. I dialed my mother. I said, "Hey, where are you people? Tune in. I'm about to be on the air." And, you know, just like that, I got on there. You know, I got on there and I said a few things. I said, "Yeah, hey, good evening, Accra. You know, time check is 3:45, cruising right here on Groove FM. My name is Chris Atto. You might not know me. I was in the library, but guess what? I just had my first opportunity now. And I got goosebumps now just talking about it." And even at the time, we had done a lot of traveling, thank God, when we were young. But at the time, I was able to switch into all these voices.
Yes.
And it became a thing. So the producer listened. And then after the show, you know, he came up, "I told you not to get on the air." I said, "Yes, sir. But I thought, you know, you thought what? Okay, look, put together a show where you use all these crazy voices and then let me see it." And that's how Bukom Square was born. It was a show that covered entertainment and restaurants and what's happening in Accra.
Oh,
and the intro of it was so interesting. Again, the influence of the early days and watching a lot of Hollywood content that my dad had brought down. I remember watching a movie called Conan the Barbarian, and the way it starts is a deep voice where, you know, "Long ago in the time where you, you know." So that was our intro.
Morgan Freeman and James Earl Jones.
All put together, I'll take it.
Do you remember how old you were when this happened?
Maybe about 18.
Wow.
Just before university. So
I must say, it does seem like way back then, younger people were given more of a chance in Ghana. Like, I don't know how this is going to happen to an 18-year-old today. I'm just saying.
Well, you know, some things have changed where it's also for the benefit. Now, younger people are so exposed to so much. It's so easy to just click and you know what's what.
They're also creating on their own now because of all
which
the apps
great.
And stuff.
Yes. We're encouraging you. Our days, you have to go to the library, open the book and start research. Which book?
Encyclopedia.
Oh, yes.
I bet you guys don't know what an encyclopedia is.
It was a thing if you could actually read the encyclopedia in those days.
So I'm going to go to when I first noticed Chris Attal. Okay, there was a show on GTV called Rhythms. And I was such a huge pop culture junkie. I used to watch Channel O and all of these things.
Wow.
And Chris would come on and, hey, what's up, guys? You're watching Rhythms. And, you know, it takes me back. I remember first it was you and Pamela Blackmore.
Pamela,
and
yes.
And then people don't know this. Pamela left. And guess who was his co-host? Jocelyn Dumas. Yes, I remember it.
Wow.
She used to have a ponytail back then and coming. She'd be out on the streets. Oh, my goodness. So Rhythm was when I first noticed you. So you went from radio and then TV presenting. Was that your first gig back in Ghana, Rhythms?
It was not. But you know what led to it? And I'll quickly bring us up to speed. Mm-hmm. So the transition from radio to television happened not in the nicest way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because... life happens, yeah. Right? So there I am thinking I'm the coolest presenter on the radio. You know, I come in, go out, you know, and I come to work one day and unfortunately, they're laying off a whole lot of people. Oh. And guess who got canned? I got fired. I got fired. I'm laughing about it now, but I remember I was so devastated because in those days, man, in order, you know, you're young, 18, I just... got my new car. You need.
You got a car at 18?
I was young. My dad had us driving by the age of 16 and
wow.
was blessed to have, he gave me his first Mercedes, which is also, I think, why I'm stuck to Mercedes at that age.
Okay.
But I was devastated because I'm like, wait, how am I going to fund this? How am I going to buy gas? How am I going to do this? And we all hit rocks in life. But, you know, when things go wrong, don't go with them. Because that's what translated into finding my way onto television. It was first the opportunity of, okay, I need to find more work. And then I tried a few jobs at GBC and then Metro TV. Mm-hmm. And simultaneously, it came through that I got both jobs. So I started working. In those days, you could literally do both. You know? So I'd do my hours at Metro TV.
What were you doing at Metro? I don't remember you on Metro.
At Metro, I used to both read the late news. Right after Anita Eskins.
Like on the camera?
On air.
Oh,
yes.
Wow, I missed that.
And it would be links to things. Like you come from a movie, be like, hi, welcome. You're watching Metro TV. Coming up now is the news.
Oh.
And I used to do that with Anita Eskin.
Okay.
And those were, again, some of our foundations.
Foundation, yeah.
And I was also in the, basically the room where you censor stuff. So again... and I'm realizing it, just talking about it. You literally, movies would come, they're in big VHS tapes, and your job all day is to watch every movie and summarize it and basically write down the synopsis. This is the synopsis.
Oh, okay.
And you have to log that for the TV stations.
Okay.
And I was blessed again because my dad was a member of the censorship board.
Okay.
And this is him doing it when I was much younger. And I'd noticed and I'd learned. So this is what I was doing for Metro TV at the time.
See, no wonder, because if you're watching so many movies, the wealth
eventually.
Of vocabulary and just your enunciation, it's just, you know what I mean? It's so
yes.
clear. Another gig that I really remember you from was the first ever TV3 mentor.
Oh, wow.
People don't remember. Chris, yeah. As I was the first mentor, you're right. Do you know any of the songs?
Oh, God, no, I do
not. I'll help
not.
You. Yeah. Tell me. Mentor's going to take you higher.
Oh, there you go.
Mentor's going to take you there. Stick to 2-3. Yes. Hold on. What was it like doing a show like Mentor? Because, you know, it was the first of its kind in Ghana, and it was the whole country was obsessed with Mentor. What was it like being on Mentor?
Thanks for asking. Again, it presents a wonderful opportunity to remind people that, you know, when you hit a roadblock, sometimes it's life just pointing you in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
I was in London at the time doing, and this is, again, it was a nice stretch. This is after university where I decided in those days, you know, when you break, you go to London, you go to work, you do all the jobs, you come back, you have a bit of money. And so I've done it all, been blessed to clean some bathrooms. I've cooked, I've cleaned the dishes. I've done it all. If I can do it, YouTube, I can do it too. But what led to it is I was in London. I was in a relationship with a young lady who was in tech. I'd left her in school.
Long distance back when there was no social media and FaceTime.
Listen,
motivation?
You call with credits. You know, those are the days you have to buy the scratch card.
Oh my goodness.
Calling America. Charlie, God is guru.
Oh,
but I was so taken by this young lady and I had tried to get a visa so many times to come join me in London. It just didn't work.
It wasn't working.
Again, life and God deciding where you need to be. And I say now our feet are led. But my stubborn behind said, you know what? If it's not working, okay. Then I'm going to forget about London. And I'd been in London for almost 4 years now.
Okay.
And I'd built something. You know, I was working for OBE TV. I was already in theater. And I didn't realize it, but these are all parts of the education that I needed to do what I'm doing now. And so I decided I'm going to call it quits. And I moved right back to Ghana. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to now ride on the fame of the radio days and the earlier, you know, TV days of Showtime and so on and so forth. And that landed me the job.
Mentor.
And wow. I remember I had to audition for Van Vicker, who was the producer at TV3 at the time.
Van Vicker was the producer of
Mentor? He was one of the producers at the time.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yes. He was there for years.
I wonder if that's why he cast Hakim. Hakim used to look just like Van Vicker. No, but so what is like the schedule of a show like TV3 Mentor? Because I know they had to rehearse and perform on, it was on Sundays, right?
Yes.
So where do you come in? Like, what was that like?
You know, that was tedious because you can't really get into it until the day off.
Okay.
So the actual rehearsal will happen from about afternoon till about 3, and then you go live from about 6. There you go. So it took a lot of spontaneity. It took a lot of thinking on your feet. I remember an episode where we had a great comedian come in and he made such a terrible joke on stage with me because, you know, I'm right there. His name is Clint the Drunk.
Oh, I know Clint the Drunk.
At the time, we were just colleagues, but I didn't know he was going to pull a prank. So there I am on stage, ladies and gentlemen, Clint the Drunk. And he says, "You idiot." I say, "Oh."
On live television.
I say, "Is it because I stole Clint's girlfriend that last week? Maybe something, this guy's going to call me out. Something's going to happen." And you know, it ended up being one of these very funny jokes. And I think you could even, you know, YouTube it and really? Find it on there. But one of the great things about the show is that it stands for a lot of things I stand for now, which was gathering our youth, taking care of our youth and homing in on their talent, young talent, nurturing it and showing them how to, you know, one way or the other, start to earn from it, which is, again, something that the Chris Hattel Foundation now does. But it was appealing. It was the hottest thing at the time.
It was.
I couldn't go anywhere. It was the reason I started tinting my windows. I couldn't go anywhere without being seen.
Really?
And don't you dare evict somebody. Now, I'll tell you a quick story.
Mm-hmm.
The weekend that Hakim was evicted.
Right.
Oh, boy. I was driving down in Nima somewhere. Didn't realize it. You know, he had big following in Nima.
Yes.
And next thing I know, you know, like, somebody's pointing. Next thing I know, there are about 10 people pointing. Say, Chris, I thought, Futaje. Now you remove Hakim, man. I'm like, yo.
Why do they always think that? Because I remember I used to get a lot of flack. I remember when, I think Martin got evicted. It was such a whole thing. And I don't know why they always used to think you were the one.
I'm like, I'm not the deceased. Don't shoot the message.
I know, right? Okay, now let's talk about your movies. Now, like I said, I've been such a huge consumer of Ghanaian arts. And I first took notice of Shirley from Paul Manso when she used to do Miss Ghana.
Mm.
I loved it because I come from the days of America's Next Top Model, you know, all of these judging shows.
Yes.
And what I liked that Shirley brought to Miss Ghana was that they had a panel of women, and when they come, it was constructive critique. She'd be like, do you want to hold your hair back? Okay, see your face. But I just loved it. So when Shirley announced that her first movie, Life and Living It, was coming out, my mother bought me a ticket and we went to the premiere at the National Theatre.
You did?
Oh, yes. And I saw that your character was a painter.
Yeah.
And now it's coming together.
Right?
Yes. So how is acting? How did that? Because that's your first movie, 2007.
Yes. Life and Living It. Thank you for that.
Yeah. How did you get that?
2007. Wait, so I've been doing this for how long again? Let's calculate.
27 years.
Wow. You know what? Oh, listen to him. Before you find out how old we really are.
No, it's fine. He has a full head of hair. Come on.
God day.
That's the thing. Your hairline's intact. That's there. Yeah.
Oh, God.
So yes. How did that first movie happen?
Life and Living It.
Yeah.
It would be the film that I would shoot that would begin a journey, you know, that little did I know would be the path to what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
What used to happen is because I had gotten a lot of acclaim from television hosting and radio, the popularity had started to rise. And so a lot of producers had started to reach out to me about being in their films. But it was never things I wanted to be a part of. Like, they'll send me a script and I'll be looking at them like, no, that's ridiculous. And again, this is not to badger them or anything, but at the end of the day, it was me realizing that because I'd been so exposed to Hollywood films at such an early age, I'm like, no, it would be better like this. Why are we not doing it like this? Mm-hmm. And I've often said the things that irk us are the things that also lead you to your purpose. Mm-hmm. And that used to irk me. Why are Ghanaian films like this? And eventually that led to film school and led to acting. And even today, one way or the other, we want to be able to do it better, mm-hmm. you know. But again, yeah. If I trailed off.
No, you know what? I like it because even though you trail off, it's always things that I'm, you know, it also influences the next thing that I ask you. But indeed. Yeah. Okay. So I think I'm just going to do a quick run through. So Life and Living It. And I think the next one I saw you in 2008 was Scorn. That was Lydia Forson's big debut. Lydia Forson went to AIS, which is where I went. So shout out.
Lydia is an amazing human
being. I hated you in Scorn. I feel like they had, you know, there was this like good boy, lover boy image that had been sold. And then in Scorn, you were such a mean person to Lydia. I was like, what? Oh. When you pour the hot tea in her face, I couldn't stand it. I was like, this is...
it's interesting. And I think that's what eventually also got me hooked to the Sparrow movies for a while. Mm-hmm. Because I kept saying no to a lot of producers at the time.
Yeah.
What Shirley produced and presented me with the first time I read that script was like, oh, wait, this is a good script.
Yeah.
You know, this is how it should be done. It was well formatted, you know, those days people send you scripts and say, what am I reading?
It had EXT, you know, the scene breakdown. You know,
and today we're great friends, like Abdul Salam, who is a godfather.
Yes. If you guys don't know, Abdul Salam is the creator of Beyoncé, the President's Daughter, right?
Well, there you go. Yeah. There you go. That mm-hmm. and many other movies. You know, at the time, again, he was a filmmaker working with what he had and his resources. Mm. But I kept saying no to him because I felt it wasn't there, you know. But when Shirley sent me that script, I read it and I said, okay, I could try this. Mm. And after Life and Living It, that was it. It was like, oh, I love this. And then Scorn came up. And I thought, okay, if I played Loverboy here, the immediate thing I didn't want to do was to be typecast right from an early age. I didn't want that. I don't want to be like the same guy every day, which happened for a little bit, which eventually led to me, you know, just even looking for more and building more and growing more and heading to Hollywood.
I mean, I feel like when I look at the roles you've played, and I mean, I haven't seen everything, but I think there's a little bit of a variation.
Thank you.
Because at the next movie, Perfect Picture. Everybody's favorite, Perfect Picture. Oh. I must say, that was the first time in Perfect Picture I had seen a sex scene done very tastefully. And that was between Jackie Opia and Chris. And I remember there was this Ifia song playing. It wasn't Weather for Two or something. And I just remember, because, you know, Ghana, we do sex scenes and it's, you know, but this one was so tasteful. I could tell there was choreography, there was rehearsal.
Listen.
You know, it was, Perfect Picture was another great one.
I would give it that. You know, Perfect Picture was, I believe, not just Shirley's attempt, but all of ours attempts to really do something different. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that made that movie special is we had basically all been shipped off to Takoradi.
It wasn't in Accra.
It was not shot in Accra. Oh, okay. The entire Perfect Picture One was shot in Takoradi. And we had been camped there for almost 6 weeks to 2 months. But it brought us all so close together. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe that's also how I ended up introducing Jocelyn to Shirley, and that's Jocelyn's first appearance in a movie.
Okay.
Then she went on to do Sting in a Tail.
Sting in a Tail is my favorite Shirley movie.
There you go.
Favorite Shirley movie. Hands down. I think what I want to ask you was, what is it like shooting sex scenes? This is a question a lot of people have, because everybody's like, there's a lot of people in the room, but when we're watching, it doesn't look like there's a lot of people. What is it? Is there like a conversation between you and your, co-star?
Oh.
What is that like?
Absolutely.
You know what? And I'll use it to finish the last question, which was, why did the sex scene look so good in the perfect picture? Mm-hmm. It took time to shoot that. And yes, it was one, Shirley as a director included the actors in everything. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, between Ken, my brother, myself, it was like, we can't just have a scene where it's like, you know, we can't, if we're doing this, let's do it properly. And I remember I had the opportunity to work on the film behind the scenes with them.
Okay.
So the music and Ifya, even at the time, you know, Ifya had just won Stars of the Future.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought she was brilliant. That's how I'm like, Ifya, come and do a song for me for this film.
Oh, so you got Ifya on the, oh, okay.
Thank God for that.
Yeah, because it was a good pick. Song choice.
Right.
Yes.
Right. That was definitely influenced. And, you know, the fact that also actors can talk about it now, and this is part of the serious part of the business. Mm. You know, a sex scene is like any other scene. And at the end of the day, it's not just because actors want to take their clothes off, you know, for the camera. Remember, this is what we do. This is society, right? And so if we can show you one thing, then we're showing you another, which is why everything has adult ratings, or you know what you're watching. But in the professional world, and I can say coming from that sex scene, because I've gone on now to shoot other sex scenes, including sex scenes in Hollywood.
Mm.
And I don't say that to impress anyone. I say that to impress upon people that it's a job. A sex scene is taking as seriously as a scene with a weapon.
A fight scene.
Yeah. Exactly. You want the story to come out great. You want people to be affected. And if indeed, as an actor, you believe that that helps the character and that helps drive the story, you want to do it right. And what happens behind the scenes, though, in the real world is, yes, it's taking very seriously. They're actually coaches. When you're working in Hollywood, they're coaches that come in, and this is there because of, you know, protecting female rights and making sure that the female feels protected and not, you know, it's not going to be just something that's just being done for any reason.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always a conversation. Mm-hmm. What are you comfortable with as the actor? The conversation between the director, the actors, sit down. What are you comfortable with?
What are your limits?
Exactly. What are your limits? What would you do? What would you not do? What would help the character? What would not help the character? So it's like breaking down any other scene.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, there are usually about 40 other people in the room. The sound man is there with the mic in your face. Mm-hmm. And yet you still have to concentrate and make it look as intimate as possible.
Okay. And then there was, of course, Sinking Sands. And then...
Oh, Lord, oh no, you have to give me
guys,
this.
Guys, I can't find it anywhere. Copy. I'm not giving it to you, Chris. I have a whole stash of shirts. Listen, I'll tell you this. I one of my biggest hopes and wishes is to interview Shelley. And I have a stack of all her movies that I have bought from when they were out. And I went and I remember I got this. I said, I'm talking to Chris today, I have to bring this out. I like this movie because it was so different.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that there are many movies of this format, but I really like this.
Thank you. Can I hold it?
Can you
touch
can hold it? But I'm taking it back home.
Wow. You know, this is why I am grateful for every single thing that has led to this journey. I remember exactly when this movie happened. I remember how.
Another thing is like Shirley, like the artwork of the movies were very different.
Yes.
You could tell there was a lot of thoughtfulness. Guys, go and find this. let's move on to Tinsel. You were on Tinsel for 7 years. What did the Nigerian film industry teach you? Because I know you were in and out of Lagos the whole time.
The whole time. I believe that the time that I spent in Lagos blessed me with a whole number of things, you know, not just in terms of a wonderful child or relationship, but obviously I believe it grew my career from, you know, just a local name to a household name in over 54 countries.
Mm-hmm.
Tinsel was also the kind of workshop or the kind of place that drilled in that discipline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were up at 5 a.m. every morning. Your call time is almost, it's about 6 a.m.
Wow.
You do a run, you do workouts, you come in, there's actor training, there's voice training, and by the time you're ready to go, and you do this from Monday to Saturday, and it really instilled something in me. I think it's been very, very helpful because now when I take a script, whether I've looked at it or not, I can take a script and give me 5 minutes, I can give you what's on the script, you know, without looking at it. And this happens because,
it goes on and on and on.
And
the thing is, you have to, you'll be shooting now and they'll bring yellow pages. Oh yeah, they just added these, you know, the
directors. To the script?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
And so you have to be on point. You have to be on point.
So one of the things that I will say is, I feel, oh my God, guys, so sorry. That is my very stubborn dog. But I realized with Tinsel, you know, when you came on, your character was in a wheelchair for a while. Mm. I think that there was a lot of facial acting. Because I think when I watch your movies and the stuff that you do, you know, you're a very physical actor, you know, very animated sometimes. But with this one, you were bound to a wheelchair and all of the expression, it really sold it for me. Mm. So I would say that. But my next question about Nigeria was, how come you never did Big Brother Africa?
You know what? I definitely tried.
You did?
I did.
How many times
did
you audition?
I auditioned twice. And the second time, in fact, is what landed me the role to host Big Brother Africa for Ghana.
Oh, yeah, it's true. Yeah,
there
it's
you go.
True.
And it was basically between myself and Kweku T at the time. And I was doing so much here, you know, working at Charterhouse, I was on radio. I'm like, I'm not going to go and sit somewhere for 3 months. And, you know, so Kweku, obviously, you know, his own credit went and I ended up being the host that year, which was good.
I you know, I remember back then, I had Sammy B, Mimi, and all, I always said, why is Chris not on this? And in my mind, I just thought you were interested. Little did I know you tried.
I tried. I was desperate. I was hungry. I was like anything and everything. And it actually leads back to your previous question. That's how I got Tinsel. Because again, I was right here like everybody else. It was an audition that was called for. And this was going to be the biggest thing that would change. They literally said it would change your life. It was going to be Africa's or one of Africa's first multicam television soaps. Mm-hmm. We didn't have that. We didn't have studios. And, you know, it was actually pegged to be shot in South Africa. Mm. So the company was going to every African country looking for who's the best actor in every country, or at least two or three. And so Nigeria did theirs, South Africa did theirs, and of course, Roger Sofime and a man named Femi Odugbemi came down to Ghana. Mm. And I remember being in that line all day. You know, 30,000 or whatever people. And yeah, I sat in that line like everybody else and went in and you know, you'd be as scared as everybody else. You're waiting to hear, you know, to do your audition, and you can hear other actors doing the role, and you're like, but eventually I got in there and you said something, you know, you said that you noticed there was a lot of stillness. That's when I started also to maybe expand as an actor, because two things that they told me got me the audition and got me the part. In the audition, I went in and literally tied my feet with a belt.
Oh, okay.
And sat in the chair and pretended it was a wheelchair. And then they got sold off completely because there was another scene where he was meant to stand and rip his, I mean, he wasn't actually meant to, and I ended up ripping it. I was in the moment. But yeah, those were the two things I think that stood out.
It got you the gig. That's all that matters.
It got me the gig, indeed.
Yeah. So now next was your, you know, your big break into Hollywood. And I have seen you in quite a number of things. Most of the stuff that I've seen you in Hollywood have been trailers, because, you know, we can't see all of the movies, but I'm just going to, the most recent one that I saw, but I know it's not as recent, is An Accidental Zombie Called Ted.
Oh, wow.
That was very interesting. I saw the trailer. I was on YouTube watching trailers, and then I'm like, wait, that's Chris Hattor.
Yep.
Because, you know, you look really young in the movie.
I know, right?
I don't know if it was you're wearing a button-up shirt and a tie. You look really young. I was like, and I checked the date, and I'm like,
I was young, though. Younger, maybe.
Yeah, but not that much.
Not that much.
And come to find out, the American Society of Magical Negroes.
Wow, you are really doing your homework.
Yeah. Like, no, I mean, and then you've been in a few TV shows as well. How was breaking into Hollywood like, you know?
Oof. You know, adversity introduces a man to himself. And I think that I may, you know, even though it was challenging before I attempted to do that, to do a transition, I think that I'd had things very easy, because my attempt to get into Hollywood probably brought about some of the biggest challenges of, you know, of my life. Mm. And I'm grateful to them now. But yeah, the true test, I think, started then. I'd gotten to a point in my career here where, like you said, a lot of the scripts that had come to my table would be the lover boy, so on and so forth. And I wasn't growing. You know, as an actor, I just gotten stuck. It became too easy. I'm like, I'm not growing. And so I ended up doing one or two workshops in America. And through even the workshops, I ended up booking one or two jobs. And after working there, once or twice, I'm like, wait, what?
Such a difference.
Such a difference in terms of the discipline, in terms of what's required of you, in terms of the scale of things. And maybe more importantly, in terms of the fact that you're an actor from Ghana somewhere and they've called you to come and now you have to perform. And I remember the first day I looked around and said, hey, I can't slack you.
You know, a little bit of imposter syndrome.
I like everybody else. I've had to deal with an inferiority complex at some point in time where you question yourself.
Yeah.
You ask yourself if you're good enough. You ask yourself, can I do this? And a lot of people said to me, you're crazy. You're driving the best cars. You're earning the best money. Your career is soaring. What are you going to do in America? But I said to myself, it wasn't enough. One, the platform to be able to speak to the world, I felt wasn't enough. Two, as an artist, I needed to grow. And that's what that brought me. Because I also remember getting to America and being a little in my head and thinking, oh yeah, I got this. I've been doing this for a couple of years. I went in for my first audition. And by the time I was done, the guy looked at me and said, you know, the accent, you got to work on the accent, bro. Like, you know, and he said to me, you probably will never work in Hollywood again. You know? Wow. And I take that because, again, I said earlier, don't let another person's opinion of you ever become your reality. What that did for me is made me put myself back in school. So when I got to America, I had to go through training again, back in school, back in actor school.
That's
what
I'm talking about.
Self-development is everything. And what came with that is now understanding also what's really required of the actor on a universal scale.
You can't,
it's not a hobby. It's not, oh, let me try. It is perfection, perfection, perfection.
Put it
Oprah
in work.
Winfrey said that the best way to deter racism is to be excellent. And that's something I took with me. I met her. I had the chance to meet her at the Essence Film Festival.
Yes. Which I was coming to that when you showed your movie 9.
Yes. Right? Wow. We're getting to
let's just jump
we
into
just
that.
Came, we are? Okay. Yeah, well, boom, we're
no,
here.
No, because listen, a friend of mine, so Rosemary Zimu from Savage Beauty. A friend of mine was out at Front Back and she's like, oh my God, because we watched Savage Beauty. Like, you will not believe who I run into. I'm like, wow. Who? He said, he sends me a picture and I'm like, what is Savage Beauty doing in Ghana? Right? And it was like 2 years ago or something. So we just like, okay, I guess she came to whatever. Then I saw the trailer for 9 and I called him. I was like, this is why she was in Ghana.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Which, you starred and you directed.
I had the opportunity to star in it and direct along with a wonderful cast. We wanted to do something that was a collage that felt very inclusive of all the places I'd been and where I'd acquired my knowledge. And so we brought in cast from South Africa vis-a-vis Rosemary. And we had actors from Nigeria, actors from Ghana, actors from Hollywood, because the movie was shot partly in Hollywood and then partly here in Ghana.
Here in Ghana, okay.
And, you know, just even, you know, since my time at New York Film Academy as a director, I've had the opportunity to direct a few things for Showmax, Net, DSCV, but this is probably the biggest and international film that I've directed. And it's taught me a lot, you know. I'm looing forward now to rearing actors, especially here, who are ready for international productions.
You know what? I used to want to be an actor. And I went for an audition. So there was this next movie star thing with Rockman Dunbar and whatever. I stayed in line for 2 days. And I went, I did the thing. And they said, oh, you're good. But it seems, I can tell that you're very young and you're not. I walked out of there and I said, I don't know. I don't do well with rejection. I don't think I can make a career where I constantly have to hear no until I say, so honestly, you guys do a great job. But I say all of that to say that if you ever have a small role,
Got you, Joseph. You know what? It gives me an opportunity to also say this, Joseph. You know, if there are people out, if there are young people out there who want to do what I'm doing, I want you to know something about the reality of acting. It's one of the best jobs in the world. It will take you places. They will fly you places. You live in the best hotels. And you experience different versions of life, right? But the reality is, even though you're living, you know, truthfully under imaginary circumstances, and you're doing that as a career and you're earning from it, you have to have your hand in other things. Mm-hmm. And it brings me also to something we were almost finishing on. I say that my biggest challenges have happened since I decided to do that transition. Most people won't participate in their own rescue. Mm. And I say that, Joseph, because I'd gotten to a point where I got to America and I thought, oh yeah, this is easy. And the truth is, it's not easy. Nothing that you want to achieve that's bigger than you is easy.
It's easy, yeah. It comes
but
with a lot
it's
of work.
So worth it. Mm. You know, and it's so necessary that you do it because it's also what will pave the path to where you're meant to go. Mm. And I'm saying that because you talked about rejection. As an actor, you will deal with rejection every single day. Mm. In America, the truth is you audition for your roles daily. That's how you get your jobs. That's how you get to the casting directors. You will hear a lot more no's than yes. You know, and I say this to encourage people that let no not be the thing that deters you. Mm. You know, be the person that is resilient. You know, do not go where there's a path already created, but create your own path and leave a trail. And I feel like just not career-wise, but even personally, personally, some of the things that I went through that really challenge you, you know, I left a great career here. I went there and it's like, oh, wait, nothing's happening. You know, the first few years were tough.
Sheep in the big
also,
city.
Yeah. And then, you know, I just left a divorce here. And a child here. And, you know, I was once, or rather second time I tried on love, you know, I was married to a warrior. Yeah. I was married to a partner who I thought I'd be with forever. That didn't happen, you know, and I say that because all of these things, they challenge you. They give you the opportunity to be better.
Yeah.
Are you going to sulk in it or can you be better? And it's made me so aware of myself, so aware of my position that, you know, if I can speak and if I can say one thing or if I can go through it so that somebody else doesn't have to, I've now realized that that's the place because God doesn't give you what you also can't handle, you know, and, I know I've got a lot, you know, when you decide you're going to go for something big, it's like, God, use me. It's like, wait, God, no, stop.
I'm not your strongest. No, but what I love is you constantly keep working. Like every time I open your Instagram, it's always something and it's work. You know, it's not mess. It's work. So for our last set of questions, because I have to ask, you've hosted the VGMAs 4 times now. Mm. Okay. I want to understand the process of becoming VGMA host. Okay. How long before the actual show are you aware that you are the host?
In the beginning, you get the correct amount of time, which should be maybe a month or two ahead. You know,
a month or
well
two.
At,
okay.
Yeah. But in the more recent years, or maybe the last two I did that before did. The break, mm-hmm. I was a part of Charterhouse. So it became almost, you know, familiar. Okay. I know it's coming up. I'm a prep. However, this last one, you know, they had been asking me a couple of times over the years, yo, come down and host this, come down. I was too busy focused on whatever I was trying to build also there. Mm-hmm. And so this year I said, oh, you know what? Let's consider. Let's just do it. It's hello, hey, oh, really? All right, fine. Let's do it. And I'm very happy I did because I feel like it's also reminded people that if we're going to do something, let's do it right. Mm-hmm. It's given me an opportunity to now reach out to young MCs and people that want to do this as a living and remind them and teach them and coach them and mentor them and show them that this is something they can eat from. And this is also a profession. It's, you know.
Do you have a budget for glam? when you be, you're the host? Did he say, okay, this goes to your outfit, your haircut?
Oh,
your
man. Shoes? I wish. I can't say that, you know, but I do have...
So you, like, everything you wear comes from yourself?
Mostly.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I'm also very picky, but Obibini clothing.
I was
going to
say, you're always wearing Obibini clothing.
I was going to say that.
But I mean, I'm just expecting that they're like, here's a budget for your three things from Obibini. Okay, how many dry runs do you do before the big day?
As many as I can get. Sometimes all you get is one.
One dry
run? In fact, yeah, and sometimes you don't get any at all.
Mm-hmm. And in the more recent times, because you know now watching VGME has become a very social media thing. Mm-hmm. Do you read the comments? Do you check for the reviews online?
Oh, I'm so bad. I can't be bothered. I literally have people say, "Oh, did you say?" I say, "Oh, really? Oh, okay. Tell me more." I honestly have not gotten to the comments. I did bump into one where it's like, "Oh, Chris Atto doesn't even know what's happening because we're not." Suggests that, oh yeah, we're gonna go to Giovanni for dancing. I'm like, yeah, we're gonna go to Giovanni for dancing. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? It's the thing that, and that's one another reason why I love your show, Joseph, because in Ghana, I feel like we're so quick to jump on the negative, and we don't celebrate the positives. Mm. So what if Giovanni got that? Still encourage it because, you know, at the end of the day, the more positive we are, it dispels, you know, the negatives. Mm.
Well, I was asking because, you know, in the most recent times, people have complained a lot about the organization,
right?
You know, so I was just wondering, but I'm assuming you don't have a Twitter account, or at least you're not the one handling it.
I do. I go there when I can.
Because on VGMA night, Twitter
it was
is,
on fire.
Yes, everybody's critiquing everything.
Look, I won't lie to you. And my Twitter hadn't, you know, tweeted in a while. But this was actually also one of the VGMAs where, or rather TGMAs now, that the MC was actually trending, you know, weeks before, or days
yes,
before the event.
Yes, because it was a whole comeback.
I appreciate that, yes.
I think the last time you two hosted was 2016.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, they're coming back. And that's the thing. I actually enjoyed the narrative of it because I like good storytelling in the promotion of a show. So I really like that. But anyway, they do have their stuff that needs to be ironed out, but
we
you know.
We can always get better.
We can always get better. So before you go, I know you're working on a movie with AY, The Waiter. It's coming out in December.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about it and then your foundation?
Oh, I love it. I'll squeeze those two things in.
I almost forgot.
I just got off the set with AY and a couple of very, very talented actors. In fact, it has a list of names that are very familiar. It's called The Waiter. It's based in Nigeria. It's going to be released to the world on Netflix December.
Okay.
And, you know, coming back home and shooting stuff here has also been a reminder of how much I've grown. You know, and I say that again to impress that, especially here in Ghana, our industry can grow and people are ready for premium Ghanaian content.
Oh, yes.
You know.
True.
So look out for The Waiter come December, another AY movie. Very quickly, Joseph, I'll get you into the foundation and what we do. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the time people have asked me, Chris, how can I be a better person, a better actor, better at emceeing, better at this? And that started... in combination with just my desire to want to help people. So what the foundation does is we unnerve and unravel and find young talents and nurture them and, you know, prepare them for the future, especially if they do have talent to show. And that's not all we do because it's all about the youth. But we're also there to provide in places that they lack. So today we could be buying oxygen tanks for people in kids in Kolibu. Tomorrow we could be paying school fees and making sure that the kids in Jamestown or orphans in Jamestown. In fact, we just did an activation where we went out to Jamestown and gave out a lot. And there were a lot of smiles. And I'm reminded because my father did say that Niato, you have to be a part of something bigger than yourself. These are the ways that I feel that as an agent of change, I can touch and affect people's lives. It is incumbent now upon me to be able to do so because what did you come into the world with? What would the world have because you came into it? What would the world have when you leave it? And these are the things that bug my mind. Mm. And, you know, I want to keep training. We're doing a lot of training sessions now with a lot of young people who are interested in film and acting. We just collaborated with the Black Star International Film Festival, okay, where we did training all week. And it shows how much talent there is in this beautiful country. I often say in life, you know, there are winners, there are losers, there are those who just don't know how to win. And Les Brown would also agree with that. And yeah, sometimes people just need a coach. They need guidance. They need someone to tell you this is how it's done. And I'm reaching out a lot towards that right now. And I'm also encouraging people, you know, whatever you're doing, you are the real change. It doesn't matter what's going on. Only you can truly change your life. If there's something you're meant for, and destiny is not by chance, it is a choice. Start making the choice now. Start making it with little decisions. If you got to wake up early because, you know, you got to read an hour in the day, read an hour, read every day, you know, wake Come up, on. Write down seven things you're grateful
Kanye's
for.
Kanye's are not going to read unless it's a tell-all book. Come on. If you put some scandal in a book.
I love it. But this is the point, Jay. Yeah. That's why I'm here. So we're going to try and encourage them.
Yeah.
Listen, and again, it's not because of anything, but it's just the same way that I was scrawny once and now here, you know, a bit more fuller.
I always thought you were going to be the next Michael Power. I'm not going to lie.
You know what? I'm still here. Yeah. It's not too late.
It's not too late. You know, if you play your cards right, the next 007.
I'll take it.
You know?
I'll take it.
But anyway, I really had a great conversation. I'm not going to lie. I feel like you present, you're very professional. Everything we see on there, like I say, is work. I didn't have an idea of what your personality would be like, but I must say, I'm genuinely surprised. You're very deep.
Oh, thank you.
You're very deep. Like, when we run this back, you have given us no less than 5 quotes.
I'll take it.
Before you answer every question as a quote, I really like that about you.
That's the reading. You've got to read every day.
Yeah. So you know what? For the first time, I'm going to let you sign up for us. Typically, I say, hey, guys, you know, thanks for watching the show. This is Sincerely Accra, blah, blah, blah. The show is Sincerely Accra. So do say something. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, man. Okay. All right. Do you want me to do that in my close-up?
Yeah, this is your close-up.
All right. Hey, what's going on? Chris Atto here with my boy Joseph, and we're about to sign off, but we don't want to leave you without some wise words. Helen Keller always said, you know what? Life is short, so eat the dessert first. Go out there and make a change. Don't wake up like a mistake. Wake up with purpose. I love you all. Right here from Sincerely Accra.
Yes, people. Yes, keep checking for us because you know it's always a good time. Thank you so much, Chris. That was good.
I love it, Jay. Thank you.
I get waiting to talk. He no green me talk. Puff, puzzle. Keep me fire burning.
Sawa.
Baby puzzle. Keep me fire burning. Puff, puzzle. Keep me fire burning.
Questions, likes and impressions. Problem no, they finish Helsinki, I'm guessing. Boys, they use humor to cover up. That currently currency low and dollar up. No sweetness here while my auntie talk. But I'm cool with the palmy pants and socks. So I chuck, I'm cool. Quiet, no be fool. So last.
Off,
thinking, daily meditation, that's a preview of my preoccupation. Daily observation, day on rotation, body chuck for one spot, mind still pacing. So if you see me seemingly quiet, boys just die, kaya yo tie. So I hush hush, sense no the rush rush. Charlie last.
Off,
This has been a Gold Coast Report production.